This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the, the 31st, last day of the month, January 31st edition of Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. I hope you are having a great day today. In his book, The Money and Your Brain, Jason Swagg talks about a physician in New York City who invested in a European-based company that makes farming and construction equipment. His only reason for buying the stock, he told a friend, was that his ticker symbol matched his initials of his name. I just have a good feeling about it. That's all. That's what he said. Do you have a question about the criteria you use to pick a stock? Because this is not a good one. Our number is 888-99-CHARGE. You can get through right now if you like. So welcome. I do appreciate you being with me today. There's always plenty to worry about. There really is. And the best laid plans can flop, or they may do very, very well in the financial world. But really, one of the biggest threats we face is ourselves. There are so many ways we can step on our own toes. So when you pick stocks, learn how to pick stocks, figure out how to pick stocks, that's not the only problem you have. The other problem is, what do you do in a market correction or a crisis? What happens? What emotions do you let get in your way? Don Clemens said it this way. If you want to see the greatest threat to your financial future, go home and take a look at the mirror. Our emotions get in the way of making decisions that are good for us. There are the influences of the world, a daily flurry of news, rumors, speculation, all that information. Fear, you name it. I can name thousands of different things that can drive you nuts and make you make decisions based on your emotions. That's the biggest danger to your financial wealth. Yourself, your emotions driving your decisions. So we're going to do our best to help you stay grounded in reality. Right now, let's turn to you and pick up a question. We try to answer your questions live during this hour, 45 Pacific time, or you can leave your questions on our 24-hour listen line, and the number is 888-99-CHART.
Hey, this is Trez from Michigan. I was just wondering what the best kind of stocks to have in my 401k are. Currently, there is bank shares and money funds going on in there, and I just need to know what's the best action to take for my money. Thank you.
Well, it depends on your age. Sounds like you're pretty young and you need to be aggressive. Money funds are nothing more than money market. You're not going to make hardly any money doing that. But you won't have any risk of your money either. There's no risk in that. You won't risk losing it. If you're young, you need to be in the market. Yes, it's pretty high right now. Yes, it could go down. But you know what? Over long periods of time, the market goes up. For a young person, you dollar cost average into the stock market, and most young people should use indexes because they don't really have enough knowledge yet to do anything else. And they should be in the market, put money in every paycheck or once a month, just constantly for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years. That's what you should do. Now, what are your choices in your 401k? What do you have to pick from? You know, usually they're not the best. But that's what you should be doing. Okay? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. I want to talk a little bit about technical analysis. When you ask me about a particular stock, technical analysis is one of the tools we use to help us tell you about that. It's a method of evaluating where the stock is trading at, where it's been, where it's going to go. Remember, where it's going to go is looking into the future. Very difficult. But we based on what's happened in the past and just project out. And remember, reading the technicals is looking at a chart, and looking at a chart is not a science. And there's lots of indicators there that they attempt to put on balance volume, relative strength, MACD oscillators. There's I can go on and on. Oh, there's 100 plus indicators, okay? Accumulation distribution. Moving averages, you can figure it out by using, you can use exponential moving average or maybe a simple moving average of the chart stock price. Moving averages is what something we use a lot to try to smooth out the erratic behavior of the stock. But many times, the stock behaves the way it behaves is because we're trying to study it. And our study of that stock means that we make it behave the way it behaves. I realize that sounds weird, but it does, because as we study it, we say, oh, this stock is at this price. It was at this price before. When it was at that price before, it did this. So I'm going to buy it or I'm going to sell it because that's what it did before when it hit the... See, we make it happen with our actions. So all these indicators are great. Very wonderful. Good thing to learn. Good thing to know. But try to remember, it's not science. It's not. But you will become more successful if you learn about technical analysis, the chart patterns, the chart move. But you buy a stock based on fundamentals. You sell a stock based on fundamentals. Maybe the fundamentals are deteriorating, you own the stock. But you don't buy a stock because of technical analysis. You want a good, solid company that makes money, that's consistently making money or growing very fast or pays high dividends or whatever reason you're buying that stock. But you don't buy it because, hey, I like it because of the stock chart. Well, you do have day traders and swing traders that do use charts to try to guess where the stock is going to go. But that's what it is. Might be an educated guess, but still a guess. Now, do you have questions about technical analysis? You can call. Feel free to ask me. Today, we're going to talk to millennials and anyone who knows what. It's how to pick better exchange-traded funds. That's our main talking point today. Plus, I want to discuss how to survive a stock market correction. You know one is coming. You know it. I know it. We all know it. But how do you survive it? How do you prevent emotions from causing you to make bad decisions? So we're going to talk about that. Something that's on everybody's mind, how does cryptocurrency work? How does it work? Everybody hears the word, everybody knows Bitcoin. How does it exist? How do I pay with cryptocurrency? How do I buy something with cryptocurrency? I'm going to try to explain some of the basic elements so that you can try to get a grasp. Because I know most people don't know. Because I asked people, and they have no idea. And finally, we had some economic numbers coming out. And I want to talk about income and spending that the consumer is doing. Remember, our economy is pushed or... pushed or retracts based on what the consumer does. So that consumer's health, wealth, jobs, all that is extremely important. So what is going on? So I want to talk about income and spending in recent months. And with the numbers that came out just this week, too. Those are things we're going to talk about. But, of course, you always come first. You have questions about anything financial, I'd love to talk to you. The market was up today. Remember, we had two pretty big down days. The market was up. The Dow was up 73, the NASDAQ up 9, and S&P up 1. And you say, okay, we had an up day. I'm afraid that day wasn't as good as you might think. It was not a good up day. It was kind of a poor up day because it was up a lot higher in the morning and gave most of this back. So that's not a good, scenario for the stock market to act that way. And you remember I'm pointing out every so often the stocks up on high volume and stocks down on high volume. Well, stocks up on high volume today were 70. Remember the market was up today, but stocks down on high volume 382. So we're seeing a pattern where there's a lot weaker than you think, even on an up day like today. But we'll see. The month of January has been very good. So we'll see. We just gave back some of that the last last three days. You can get through to us right now with your questions. Would you like to share an investing experience that taught you a lesson? I'm money manager Steve Peasley. We're here for you. 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk. Let's go talk to Ben in San Mateo. How you doing, Ben?
Doing good. Thank you for taking my call. Was wondering, for someone who doesn't want to get into the stock market, they have some excess cash. Do you have any class or sort of like bank CDs or something that you might recommend? I'm not sure nowadays what might be somewhat secure to get, say, a 2.5% return annually.
Oof. That's pretty difficult in this market, Ben, because, you know, the savings and CDs, they just don't pay that much on an annual basis, 2.5 in the savings account or their one-year CDs. They just don't pay it. You might get 1.5, but I can give you a place to look. You can go to bankrate.com,
okay.
Ben, bankrate.com,
okay.
And they list
okay.
the highest returns, and you're going to find, I think you're going to find like credit union banks. Credit unions pay the highest CD rates. So you may just have to shop around out of your state or, you know, some out of your city at the very least. But that's where you can find the best rates for CDs and savings accounts.
Okay, thank you. Those treasury yields that we see on the news paying 2.7%, are those not available for purchase just by average Joe?
Sure, you can buy those. You can buy them. You're talking about the 10-year treasury. You got to buy a bond for 10 years and you'll get...
How do you buy those?
You can do it several ways. You can buy it aftermarket. In other words, you go to your bond desk at your... maybe you have E-Trade or Scottrade or something, or Ameritrade, TD Ameritrade. You go to the bond desk. Hey, I'd like to buy a 10-year treasury. Now they're gonna take a little piece of that 2.7 to buy it for you, or you can go to Treasury Direct and you can buy it directly yourself. And then you don't have to pay anybody anything. But because the government auctions bonds off every couple weeks, they have 2-year, 5-year, 10-year auctions going all the time. That people ask me, well, how's the government go into debt? Well, how they go? They sell treasuries, their bonds. It's a promise to the government to pay you interest, and you give them your money. So you can go call Treasury Direct.
Get online and do that. Is that very easy?
Actually, it's pretty.
To get online, buy them.
It's pretty easy. I've done it. It's pretty easy. You have to, what they do is it's just a form that you have to fill out. You have to give them a copy of a bank statement or a check of the account that they get. They're going to take the money out of and then you put an order in for the next 2-year, 5-year or Treasury Direct, and they'll buy it for you. And through your bank, go down to your bank. They'll explain how it works. They'll tell you.
Thank you.
Okay, Ben. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Good questions. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, everybody. A question for you. When you purchased that stock recently, were you motivated by data or story? A story. Were you looking at the fundamentals, or did you buy it because you heard a good story about it? Let's talk about that. 888-99-CHART is how you reach me right now. So how do you pick an ETF? How do you know? Of course, the simple answer is, well, you just buy an exchange-traded fund that buys indexes, because that's what a lot of them are, just index ETFs. But a lot of them, there's more and more and more coming out, as thousands of them, and they keep slicing and dicing the market in little bits and pieces. So how do you know which bits and pieces you should buy? Now, my standard reaction when someone says, what should I buy? I tell them to go buy an index ETF. S&P 500. And if you ask me, well, which one, I would probably point you at Vanguard because they're the cheapest. That's one of the ways you pick an ETF, by how much the management fees cost. Okay, so that's one way to do it. So you always look at the cost of the ETF because it will eat into, just like the cost of a mutual fund, they eat into your numbers. Like, you know, so that's one way. So you always try to find the less expensive. If you're going to buy an S&P 500, why wouldn't, you know, ETF that just tracks the S&P 500, why wouldn't you buy the cheapest one? Why? Of course you would. Now, I'm now going to tell you about spreads, ETF spreads. Remember, ETFs trade during the day, right? That's the beauty of them. You can buy them and sell them during the day. Well, remember, they're tracking an index. So if you ever looked at an ETF spread, in other words, you'll see a buyer who's making an offer and who's making an offer to buy and a seller who's willing to sell. There is a spread there. It might be small, very small. We're talking hundreds of percents here, not real, pretty tiny. To make the market smooth, to match up the buyer and seller, there are the market maker in there, in between there, and he's the one that gets the spread. He's the one to make sure there is a buyer and seller. Sometimes if there isn't a buyer and someone wants to sell, they have to buy or they have to sell. They do it. So there are spreads, and the less liquid ETFs, in other words, there's not a lot of trading going on, the spread gets a little bit bigger. Okay. So there's not that many reasons how to pick an ETF. You always, of course, you don't want to buy an ETF that has any kind of commission. There's too many free ones out there. No commissions or need to pay. Your brokerage firm may charge you a $5 trading fee. That's possible, like they do with stock, and that's pretty common. You know, it could be $5, could be $7. It depends. But I don't want you to think that all ETFs are, you know, you buy and hold, because you don't. Many of the ETFs, like they're short ETFs, they're short the index. Those are not buy and hold. There's ETFs that, you know, goes through currencies. There's ETFs that buy commodities. Maybe it's not a good time to be in commodities. So when you start getting away from the indexes on the ETFs, it gets harder and harder to decide what ETF you should own, because then you have to kind of understand how markets work, how the economies work, and decide which ones are best at what time. Okay, let's get back to our 24-hour listen line, pick up another question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Yeah, Mark from San Diego. I had a question. I got a fund, gas utility fund, GAS, GASFX. It's the Hennessy Gas Utility Fund. But it's basically on gas in general, because I read some negative articles recently where they're talking about solar and wind, and it's the end of using gas, electric cars, all this stuff. And I find it hard to believe that natural gas that currently in a massive production phase is going to disappear anytime soon. The fund's been going up and down. I've just been sitting on it. I don't mind sitting on it. I'm just curious of your long-term outlook as a buy and hold, or even add a little bit more since the fund has recently tumbled down. So thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, this is Hennessy Gas Utility Investors, a symbol. It's a three-star Morningstar fund, three stars. They go from no stars to five stars being the best. GASFX, it pays a 2.4% yield or so. And it's buying natural gas and stocks, U.S. stocks of all the natural gas distribution, searching for the natural gas, sending it, you know, anything natural gas they can invest in. Natural gas is not going away. You know, everybody's so enamored about electric cars. Just to give you an idea, it's less than 2%. Electric cars are less than 2% out there. Yes, it's growing and growing fast. Will it double to 4%? Yes, it will. It'll take a few years, but it'll double. What about the other 96%? That's gasoline. Natural gas is going to be very, you know, it's going to continue to the high demand. It's a clean energy source. What's great is the U.S. is a very large producer of natural gas, and now we're liquefying it and sending, shipping it off to Europe and selling it to them to compete with Russia, whose pipelines go into Europe. And, you know, the Europeans are getting a little nervous about relying on Russians for the natural gas. So, yeah, it's got a good future. Now, if the prices are going to fluctuate. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, should you go Roth or regular IRA? Which one? That's one of our talking points next time. My direct line here is 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues on next. It may be hard to believe, but the average 401k investor misses out on over $5,000 per year in investment gains. How come? Poor timing and subpar fund choices. That's the big challenge that is being met now with active 401k. The typical 401k plan has limited choices. People don't know what to do, and that's exactly why active 401k was devised. It may be just what you've needed. It ranks your current options within your current employer's plan, and then all you do is log in and make the changes. You'll be told exactly what to buy, what percentages, and what funds. This program is offered by invitation to KPP clients and limited number of our listeners, too. And if you'd like to see more about it, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab, and then look for Active 401k. Now, let's get back to our podcast. This is Invest Talk, and we talk about growth stocks all the time. What types of companies are classified as growth stocks? Or what's your money question? Go to the phone right now. Steve is on the line at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Daniel. I'm calling from New Jersey. I've been listening to your show for a few weeks. Very, very new to investing. And I had a question about a stock, BMCH. It's a building material company. Just wanted to see if you could let me know what you think of that, if it's a good investment or not, and look forward to hearing it. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, it's BMC Stock Holdings, Inc. is the name of the company. It's a $1.5 billion company, so small cap. It distributes lumber and building material to new construction and repair remodeling contractors in 17 states. So it's making money. Earnings are growing every year now for since 2015, and it's going to make $1.04 this year and $1.47 next year. It's a $22 stock, so that means it's about 15-16 PE based on next year's earnings. So in the 5-year range is 9-86. Return on equity is 10%, which is a little low. They don't have much debt, which is good. Cash flow is strong. No dividend. Mutual funds are buying. Now, you notice that the stock on a chart has fallen from $25 down to $22 in the last month, for the month of January. So all the month of January, this company has fallen while the rest of the market has gone up. Now, you would think, okay, well, that's bad news. Well, I don't know if it's bad news. How about it was just too expensive and it's just giving back some of that? So now it's approaching its 200-day moving average, which is $21.85 on my chart. And it is a $22.40 stock. If it holds, you want to wait till it holds, let it trade sideways and move up again. And this could be a good buy point right at this 200-day moving average. It looks like there's a lot of support in this area. So there's also a lot of support right around 1950 and then again at 1850. But I think this $21.50 to $22, that range is a very good support, but you want to wait till it shows you. And, you know, at 15, it's not, you know, based on next year's earnings, it's not underpriced. And if you think construction is going to be doing well in the next year or two, this stock earnings should continue to grow. BMCH is the company. BMCH. Okay, and make sure it's not just, you don't own one stock and that's it. That's not a smart way to invest. Buying a stock or two stocks or four stocks or seven stocks. That's not enough. If you can't afford to buy more, you need at least 15, 20 stocks at least to spread them out, spread in different industries. If you can't do that, you stay with the indexes. You stay with ETFs. You stay with different sectors using ETFs. But don't buy individual stocks with, you know, if that's all the money you have to buy the one stock. It just doesn't make sense. It's too risky. Too risky. Okay, let's first go to how to survive a stock market correction. We all know that's coming, right? Now, I've told you at the beginning of the show, you know, if you can't let your emotions drive your decisions. So you need to kind of prepare yourself for whenever that happens. It's going to happen. I just can't tell you when. I don't know. No one knows. No one knows. I can tell you the market's overbought, and that's one of the reasons why it gave back, you know, 500-600 points this week, you know, so far. So, you know, I can tell you those kinds of things, but no one really knows where or how much it's going to go down. I can tell you what a normal pullback looks like, 10%. That's a normal correction, 10%. We haven't seen one of those all last year. I can tell you how often they usually happen, in a bull market even, once or twice a year. Didn't happen at all last year. What I can tell you is how to prepare yourself for this correction. Emotionally, I'm talking about how to prepare yourself. You can do it emotionally by saying, okay, write down. If the market goes down 5,000 points in the Dow, I'm going to do this. In other words, write down now what you're going to do. Whether it's nothing, still write that down. I'm not going to do anything. Keep it in front of your face whenever you think you're going to go and buy or sell something. Know what you're going to do beforehand. Don't make a decision while the crisis is happening. Now, you can also prepare it in a different way. You can start being more defensive in your holdings. Defensive stocks are those that are big blue chips, pay dividends, that are not cyclical. I mean, there's ways you can defend yourself. You can buy gold mining companies that usually hold up, don't always, but can hold up in a crisis. You know, there's things you can do. You can hedge. But you do that now, before the crisis. You start thinking about that and do it now. You don't wait till the crisis is in full bloom and then start doing stuff because your emotions are making your decisions, not you. Not rational you, anyways. Don't let your emotions decide things. Let's go to Noel in Napa. How you doing, Noel?
Great, Steve. Let me see. Oh, yeah. I think we visited Ford once, but a while back. But it's there's been some change. Uh-huh. It's in this softer market activity lately. It's dropped down about a buck a share. It's a little just a. Well, I don't know where it closed today, but earlier in the day it was a hair below 11. And but the significant thing is that the dividend has been increased. It was 60 cents per year, and starting this quarter, uh-huh. It's now $1.12 per share. So that works out at this price about 10.23% yield.
Yeah, pretty nice, huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Ford, everybody.
See what you think at this price.
Well, I think it's getting awful attractive. It was $13 or so just, beginning of this month, beginning of January. And now here it is at $11. And that's a pretty good fall. That's 30%+, right? I mean, maybe not 30, maybe 20, 25. Okay, so it's had a really big correction, and that's what's also driving up that dividend yield. I mean, because the lower the price...
I've never seen a dividend where I don't follow everything, but that's the first time a stock I've had an interest in had a dividend increase of almost 100%. Maybe 90% or something. Well, that's big to me.
That is big. That's big to everybody. Yeah. No, not just to you. Yeah, I think if you're going to buy Ford, this is the kind of area you're going to buy it in. It has a ton of support around $10.50, just a ton. I don't think it's going to drop below that. I can maybe go down to $10.20. it would be very unusual. It hasn't been below $10 since 2012.
Okay? Right.
So,
yeah. Excuse me.
So there's a, between here, this price and $10.20, this is where you're going to buy it if you want to buy it, and you're going to buy it because that dividend looks really attractive. It is a cyclical stock, meaning, you know, an economic cycle, this will go down, but we're not anywhere near a recession, so I kind of like it.
Yeah.
I like the way it's forming up. Okay, Noel?
Okay.
Appreciate the call. Thank you.
I just thought I'd get the expert to weigh in, and I appreciate what you're saying.
Thank you, Noel. Let's go to BJ in Fremont. How you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good. Thank you, Steve, for taking the call. Today, can you tell me that this home building stock like Home Depot, is there some seasonality potential right now? Is summer around the corner or spring coming up? Home building may pick up. People may do some extra work.
Generally,
so at where it stands today, what you think going forward?
You'll find a lot of people argue that there is some seasonality to companies like the Home Depot as spring approaches because of the East Coast. They start to unthaw out back there, and in the Midwest, they start to unthaw. So they think about home projects, and they go buy stuff, and therefore sales go up in the middle quarters. And to some degree, that's true. I mean, if you look at last year's July quarter, it was $1.97 the earnings. Then the next quarter, $1.80, then $1.44. And so it went down. And it's true. There is some seasonality to Home Depot and those kinds of companies. I don't know if that should be the reason you buy it, because I don't know how much that will affect stock prices, that seasonality. I don't know if that's something that you should buy it because of the fundamentals and the technicals. And it looks like, boy, it had a really big dip yesterday, but it made a lot of that back, I see. It's selling for $200.90. Their earnings are going to go up 14% this year, about the same amount next year, and even 2019 is going to go up 22%. So the numbers look pretty good, and it's also, you know, tied to the economic cycle, but again, we're not anywhere close to a recession out there. I did notice that there was a lot of insider buyers when it was around $120, $130, but no insider buyers since then. So it's been about 6 months now. So the insiders, you know, after the stock started moving up, they decided not to buy anymore. So, you know, that's interesting. It is a bit pricey. It's at the high end of its P.E. ratio, BJ. I'd wait for a pullback. I don't know when you'll get it, but I'll wait for one. It's just too expensive for me. Thanks for the call. That was Home Depot, everybody. The symbol is HD. HD, Home Depot. 888-99-CHART. Okay. Now, I set aside time each month to talk with our listeners on a one-to-one basis, offering a second opinion about their retirement portfolio, offering some ideas and solutions. And it can be done via Skype or telephone or in person. I will be in San Jose on February 7th. And I looked at the schedule and I got one afternoon appointment left open. So if you want to get in, now's the time to get it. One afternoon appointment left, February 7th in San Jose. If you'd like to reserve that hour, hour and a half or so, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab, then portfolio review.
Our free risk analysis tool not only evaluates and quantifies your risk tolerance, it's also the first step in determining if your current retirement portfolio, with its mix of stocks, funds, bonds, and cash, is exposing you to too much or maybe not enough risk. It's easy to use and it's free. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab, and then look for free risk analysis.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Jake from Harrisburg. I'm calling concerning Wynn Resorts, WYNN. It's fallen quite significantly the past two trading days due to the sexual misconduct allegations made against Steve Wynn. And I'm wondering if maybe this is a buying opportunity, but I can't help but notice that it's got a really high debt-to-equity ratio, at least based on the information I'm looking at, and the return of on assets seems still pretty low. So I'm wondering if maybe it's not a buying opportunity. Just wondering what your thoughts might be. I love the show, listen all the time, and I'll listen to your answer on the podcast. Thank you.
Well, one of my big concerns, Wynn International, W-Y-N-N, Wynn Resorts operates Wynn Macau, Wynn Las Vegas, Encore, you know, different, you know, big, huge. It's a $17 billion company. My concern with this company is the high price and the debt. I mean, you're talking about a company that earnings are going up. Sales are going up pretty fast. That's one of the reasons why it's high price. I mean, sales are raising, 30, 40% a quarter the last 2 years. And earnings are going to be $7.49 this year after making $5 last year. That's a 40% increase. And then $8.98 next year. So $9 next year, but it's $165 stock. It's not cheap. So even after it pulled back from 200 down to 165, it's still not cheap. Now, if it holds this area, this might be a good buy point on a chart. This looks like support right where it hit. The next big strong support is right around 143 or so. It's right now 165. So if it holds this area, 160, 165, this may be a very good buying opportunity, but don't think you're getting a bargain. You are not. Even though it's a $17 billion company, the dividend's only 1.2%. Cash flow is huge at $10.70. So you would think they would pay a lot more than that 1.2% dividend. Is it a good company? Yes. Very good, solid company. It's very solid. Don't have to worry about the company itself. And, you know, if it fell to a really cheap price from the allegations against Steve Wynn, it would be a great buying opportunity because that has nothing to do with the company. When I say that, I mean the earnings, the sales, the company. Nothing really to do. It's not going to make less sales because of this. That's not going to happen. So I just don't think it's cheap enough, but I would be a buyer if it holds this area long enough. It's got to go sideways for me for a while. Then you could take a shot at it. I like its competitor a lot better. And I'm not supposed to mention companies, but you know there's not too many of them out there. I like them a lot better than Wynn. With so much information, events, controversies, it's hard to keep your head straight. It's best to keep the long view, and that's hard to do, as I've mentioned this hour, about because of emotions. Today's headlines will be faded. They mean very little. It's, you know, on a day-to-day basis, something comes up all the time. So you have to look at more of a long-term. What's your long-term goals? That's what you really should concentrate. So let's talk about that. Check in right now. 888-99-CHART is our direct line with any money questions.
Hi, this is Amy from Harrisburg. I'm calling to inquire about FNB Corp. I'm interested in buying, however, concerned about low return on equity and low return on assets. Just calling to get your thoughts. Thanks. Bye.
I'm actually very happy to hear you say that. You should be concerned about low return on equity, low return on assets. This is FNB Corporation, the symbol's FNB. It's a holding company for First National Bank of Pennsylvania, operating via 324 offices in areas of Pennsylvania, Ohio, Maryland, and West Virginia. The return on equity is only 8%. That's not very good. And for a bank, the debt is very low. That's unusual. Banks usually carry a lot of debt. Now, that means it's a very strong bank. That's what it's telling you, because they don't have a lot of debt. They're going to make $1.13 this year, $1.24 next year. Their sales are growing by 40% for the last three, four quarters in a row. So it's doing very well on that. But you're right, the return on equity is very low. Return on assets is very low. I don't usually mention this, but it's selling for 1.8 book value. And the reason why I mention that is because banks usually don't sell for that. It has a 3.3% dividend yield. And insiders have been buying for the last couple of years consistently. If the PE is 15 and the range is 13 to 18, actually, I think this is a pretty darn good bank to own. Even though the return on assets, return on equity are low, you have very good cash flow, very good earnings, and sales growth is very high. You just, you know, the bank is very strong. So you just got to understand that you're going to live by that 3.3% dividend. It's a $4.6 billion bank, so it's a mid-cap bank, not one of the bigger ones. FNB. 888-99-CHART. Let's see. Cryptocurrency. How does cryptocurrency work? What is it? I think a lot of people are having a hard time wrapping their head around this concept of cryptocurrency. First of all, it's in the ether. It's not dollars and cents. It's not yen. It's not any kind of foreign currency. It is a new kind of currency. It's a virtual currency. It exists in the ether, in your head, in the computer systems, online. There's no physical presence at all. It uses cryptography, cryptology. You know, that stuff that you can't break into, you know, the secret stuff. Okay? That kind of, think of it as cryptology is like how it's produced, how it's tracked. It's produced by cryptology, and they produce units. And each unit has a value based on dollars and cents or yen or whatever. But what makes it have a value? How? What makes the dollar have a value? What makes the yen have the value? What makes the euro have a value? It's what you think it is. It's what somebody else will pay for it. That's it. What will somebody else pay for it? Well, how does it exist? Can they make more? Yes, they can. They can mine it. They track it with a blockchain. You've heard those terms. How do they mine it? Mine it is verifying the cryptocurrency transactions. Blockchain is automatically and constantly updated public ledger of all transactions. That's how they keep track of it. They mine it to make more. You can get more cryptocurrencies that way. And the blockchain is where it tracks. So now, the problem you see here is the blockchain tracks every unit from the very beginning of its existence till today. So there's no... The value is determined by people, okay? So try to remember that this is just currency in the ether, and it's worth what you think it's worth. That's it. Time to wrap it up, everybody. A reminder, I will be in San Jose for individual retirement reviews February 7th. I do have one appointment slot left, and that's a week from today, by the way. So take advantage if you need to. If you're interested, go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then Portfolio Review. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And I thank you for spending the time today with me. Justin Klein and our whole KPP family, thank you very much. Let's meet again here tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.